You should be warned, the upcoming episode will be full of unfiltered, off-the-cuff discussion. As such, you should consider this your spoiler warning.
Hello, listeners and viewers. My name is Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast where, for better or worse, for good or bad, we grind out every experience presented to us and give you our honest opinion on those experiences. This week's episode, I'm going to go ahead and say it, was a grind for me to finish this.
It was. We are talking about The Fisher King. From Terry Gilliam.
In 1991.
Yes. And neither of us had seen it before.
Never. And that's a thing that I feel like we're going to try to incorporate more as we go forward. Movies that both neither of us have seen.
Yeah, we both go in blind without like any preconceived,
which is great. I think it'll be a great thing. I mean, obviously there's going to be some things that are impossible, but it's something I look forward to, looking for movies that both of us have never seen. So
I think we have another one coming up, if I believe, from my list.
Which one?
Well, do we want to spoil it? Well, Vertigo, right?
Oh, yeah. Hitchcock.
Yeah,
exactly.
We both have never seen Vertigo, and it's one of the best movies of all time, according to
IMDb. That'll be really good to get into. I do look forward to that one. But we are going to talk about The Fisher King, 1991, with Terry Gilliam directing, and it stars Robin Williams and Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, and Amanda Plummer, Honey Bunny from Pulp Fiction.
Exactly, that's the only thing. I was like, who is this? Yeah. I know her, and then I looked her up later, and I was like, oh, of course, that's what it is.
That's all you've done. Oh.
But before we get into that, this week has been pretty fucking amazing for movie trailers because...
Why? Why is that, Kyle?
Comic-Con is currently going on. To fully date this episode, it's Comic-Con 2016.
Specifically San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, San Diego's Comic-Con, and it has been just... yesterday was just... it was 2 days ago now, I think.
Yeah.
Was just fucking blown away with an insane amount of trailers dropping. You want to go ahead and list them off, Ryan?
Oh, man. All right. So I think the two big ones that people are talking about are from DC.
Yep.
And that is Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Which is directed by Patty Jenkins. That will be coming out early next year, like the early summer blockbuster. And then the other one was we actually got footage from the Justice League, which is surprising because that just started shooting.
Yes.
And it's probably about a year or two away. Zack Snyder's directing again. But this time, Batman and Wonder Woman are joined by The Flash, Cyborg, and Aquaman. And
it seems to be Batman.
I guess
going
we'll
around
just let's talk
crew.
About those two before we get into the other ones and list them off. But I hated Batman versus Superman.
I know you did.
I had no fun.
I enjoyed it for a bit, but I'm also more in the camp that like it was not a great movie.
Yeah. And you can hear more of our thoughts if you go back and listen to that episode. It's a really good episode. We have our friend Nathan on.
I have heard a lot of good things about the extended cut, however.
I think that's some publicity happening. People are getting overhyped.
It's been from friends that have watched it that I trust their judgment that have said, like, you know, this actually holds up better, and I can't believe that they released the movie in the state that it was.
I've not seen it either.
I have not, but I have no
interest in going back to
it. I think
movie.
I will, and I'll make the decision for you.
But
if you should.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, like, some of my friends who seem, like, right on my level about everything, like, especially the big ones recently, he saw it and he said it was, you know, it makes more sense connectively. Like, the editing is a lot better.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's a big
but
part.
The material they had still is not great, and they're still. Just that dour tone and just the last maybe, 40 minutes to an hour are practically unchanged.
Okay.
And I think that's where my biggest issue with the movie was. So I still don't find myself interested. Because even if they make it make more sense, because that movie has so many logic plot holes, it's still not going to be a fun movie.
Fair enough.
Which ties into the Justice League, because this looks hella fun.
This looks to be a complete 180 from where Batman and Superman was going. I can't say for sure.
Studio interference.
That's
I'm
what.
Sure
yeah,
is a big
I've
part
I've
of
heard
it.
That's the big rumor is that Zack Snyder is on a tight leash now, which I think is for the best, especially for something of this caliber. Marvel seems to be okay with letting things run a little looser, and it helps them out, but...
Usually it's their better movies.
Yeah.
Like, Guardians of the Galaxy was let loose, and Avengers, the first one, was let loose. Like, those are some of the best.
Mm-hmm. But Batman and Superman is definitely not one of those. And I think Zack Snyder definitely needs some control.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody from outside telling him, nah, let's... So, this trailer has a completely different feel.
Yeah, it's
from Batman, Superman.
Light. There's colors in it. It's jokey. There's banter between the superheroes. They're not being just bro dicks. They're like, they seem relatable. And that's something that is not in Batman versus Superman to me. Is I can't relate to either Batman or Superman. And even people who like that movie, can you relate to those two?
Batman,
it's hard.
To me, in Justice League, he almost seems a bit cheekier. I mean, he's still hardcore Batman and still has that edge, but he seems to... He's not so goddamn brooding like he's been for the past decade with Christian Bale.
I'll tell you what it is. He seems more like Nick Fury. Like, it's the kind of seriousness with, like, a slight joke there. Because, he tells jokes in this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed everything I saw. I'm still... The only niggling thing is some of the costuming.
Which is, it's so funny that this bothers you, because I don't mind. But I know I was all up in arms about Spider-Man and Captain America Civil War. I did not like that costuming. I thought it looked a little bit silly and jarring.
Oh, yeah.
And you feel the same way now about the Flash's costume, whereas I'm okay with it.
It's not silly as much as it's over-designed. Like, it's almost like an Iron Man suit for Flash, and it just doesn't... It doesn't look good. Like, you know, Flash is speed. Mm-hmm. It needs to be sleek, not bumpy and
not bulky,
edgy
too.
And bulky. Yeah. And so there's just some costuming stuff I'm not crazy about. But other than that, like, I'm looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
And more so, Wonder Woman, I think, is looking really fantastic.
Wonder Woman looks like it will be great in spite of
it being Captain America, the first Avenger.
No. More
in spite of
Gal
Gadot's questioning acting abilities.
There we go. I think Wonder Woman was incredibly miscast with Gal Gadot. And especially now leading an entire movie, I'm curious to see how this is going to play out, like, with her. Because, I mean, in Batman, Superman...
I was hoping for, like, Gina Carano.
Gina Carano would have been a great Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I think people would say, like, oh, I don't know her acting ability. I think she's at least as good, if not better, than Gal Gadot.
And
I've
she
seen.
Can...
And she looks, like, physically intimidating. Like, Gal Gadot looks more like a supermodel.
And the with Gal Gadot speak, I mean, it's very obvious she has an accent that she's trying to hide.
Yeah.
There needs to be some... And I'm sorry, you know, call
she
me
shouldn't
nitpicky.
Hide it. She should either... shouldn't try to hide it. If you're not good at, like, changing your accent... Like, Wonder Woman is an Amazonian from a made-up mythical island off, like, in the Greek island somewhere. She can have an accent. But that they're hiding it. I can see that.
And the fact that she's not hiding it well, it's either do it all or do it nothing. Like Henry Cavill, he's a Brit. You would never know when he's Superman. So many of these superheroes lately are British. Christian Bale is fucking Scottish, I believe, or Welsh. You would have no idea that that dude is not from America in most of his movies. But Gal Gadot, it is glaringly obvious that something is off here. Mm-hmm. So
she's done two Fast and the Furious movies and then moved up to this. And I don't know.
This also stars Captain Kirk, I saw from Star Trek.
Yes. His name's escaping me. Chris Pine.
Yeah, Chris Pine as a World War I fighter pilot. Which looks interesting.
Telling jokes again.
Yeah.
There are jokes in this trailer. Mm-hmm. It's bright, colorful. Like her outfit has color to it.
Yeah.
It's not fucking sepia tones. Like
the outfit does look so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the classic Wonder Woman, and it's also a bit of the more modern Wonder Woman, too. She has the armor-plated skirt, almost.
Mm-hmm.
I was very excited to see her using the lasso in this trailer, which she did not use in Batman vs. Superman, I don't recall.
I'll
she
say
just had the Sword
the,
of Hera, I believe.
Yes, The action looks a lot better, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Zack Snyder knows how to direct stylish action. But I found it kind of lacking in Batman vs. Superman.
Outside of the one awesome Batman scene, I totally agree.
That Arkham style or Arkham influenced Batman scene. Yeah, I agree.
The warehouse scene was
completely
fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. But I totally get
you.
So
the way she's moving around just feels so unique. It's almost like a kung fu movie, like on wires. Like, it's very floaty, but it just feels like something you haven't seen. And I appreciate what I'm seeing there. So
I have high hopes, DC.
Very high hopes.
I have given you a lot of passes. I'm a big DC guy.
I don't have many more left.
Maybe I could go that way. It just seems you seem to be doing well so far, and I wish for the best because I want you to. So
yes,
I hope that what I'm seeing in the trailer is what I'm supposed to be seeing, and you're not pulling a Rube on me.
So. Agreed. After Batman vs. Superman, I said I was done with DC. And now because of these trailers, I'm interested again.
So not only DC, Warner Brothers, which is related to DC, they had some good stuff too. What did they release?
Well, the Lego Batman trailer.
Yeah.
The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the Harry Potter follow-up.
Which is not, I don't really care, but I know that movie is going to be huge.
Yeah, I mean, I never read the Harry Potter books. It came like right when I thought I was too old enough for them, so I didn't read them. And then when I found out I could have read them, it was too late. And then like the movies were almost wrapping up. It's like, I don't fucking care anymore.
I listened to all of the audiobooks after they had all the first six had released. And because I thought the same as you. I was like, oh, this is kids crap. Yep. This is garbage. I don't care. And then when I worked this really dead-end annoying job, I listened to audiobooks all the time. And I downloaded all those and I was like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah?
So I would absolutely recommend them. I'm not a Harry Potter nerd like a lot of people are, but it is really well done.
What do you think about the movies?
I've only seen like the first two, and they're okay.
Well, those aren't the
I've
seen them all now. It gets a lot better.
Yeah,
Christopher Columbus does the first two, and I guess he was a good director at some point, but I can't think of a single movie I've loved of his. Yeah, no, I'm thinking Cameron Crowe movies I like. Not Christopher Columbus did nothing I like. There you go.
Yeah.
But after that, you get really inspired directors like Alfonso Cuarón directed the third one.
Yeah.
And then David Yates takes over and he does something interesting. But this new one, it's not a Harry Potter movie. It's set before then, but it's in the world.
It's in the universe. Yeah. It's got Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
I forget who the chubby guy is, but he looks to be
Dan Fogler.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to Eddie Redmayne.
Was he in Balls of Steel or Balls of Fury? Yeah, yeah.
With Christopher Walken, the ping pong movie.
Yeah. He was pretty good in that. He looks like he'll be very enjoyable in this. I think he'll be the one I like.
Dan Fogler he's been somebody I've wanted to like and I've never been able to like. Like I like what he's trying to do, but he never either he's not given funny enough stuff or he's not funny enough. But, it's never connected with
him. I think generally what my problem with him has been is that he's always been in, like, that niche be crude movie. It's like...
Yes.
He's like poor man's Vince Vaughn, let me just say. I think...
Yeah. You know, he's a little bit more screechy and shouty, like...
Yeah. But what I'm... He's
it's almost like Chris Farley-esque, like that almost, yelling. Yeah,
but he's not nearly that caliber either. But in this one, it seems to be a little bit more serious where he's just a fish out of water, but not in a vulgar, silly way.
Yeah.
It looks enjoyable.
Agreed. It looks fine.
Yeah. I don't really have much to say about it.
But I don't know. What was there anything else that WB came out with? Those are the only two I remember.
Were they not? Are they not also Kong?
Oh, are they Kong? I think they might. I don't know if they are or not.
There is another one that's WB. I want to think it's Kong, but it might not be.
Let's just say, fuck WB and move on to Kong, Skull Island.
If it is, cool. If it's not, we fucked up and we don't care.
So Laura and I went through all these trailers because I was super excited, so I kind of have to make her excited. She likes some of the stuff, but we saw Kong and we were like, what? And we just had to click it to see. And after we were done, I was like, if you would have told me this morning there was a Kong movie and I'd be interested in it and excited for it, I'd slap you in the face because you're lying to me right now.
So but I take it you did not like Peter Jackson's.
It was fine. It was overlong.
It was overlong, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah, it had been really enjoyable.
It's more to me as a love letter of the original Kong. Less of...
Yeah.
I mean, it is sort of an original take, but it's more... You can
it's
tell,
kind of slavish to the original.
Yeah, you can tell Peter Jackson really liked the original and wanted to.
Yeah.
And it just pays more homage to that than takes more risks. Yeah. So,
but it was a big, big event, big CG, big feature. And, you know, before I saw this trailer, I was like, I don't want to see you just do another King Kong story where he goes to New York and it's the same thing we've seen over and over again. Like, I think even though it was probably over 10 years ago now, Peter Jackson's King Kong is still very fresh in my mind. Like, it was big enough that, like, it doesn't, it feels like it doesn't need to be rebooted yet.
And this is not a reboot, though. I should make that clear. This is not.
And that's why I'm excited, because I literally knew nothing about this going in. It just, I've seen it on websites, and it's like, I don't want to even click to learn information. Like, I just don't care. But it looks like it's pretty much all on Skull Island. Like,
it is.
They're not showing a lot, and I didn't know the actors involved.
It's got some big names, dog. Oh, my God.
Brie Larson, Tom Hiddleston, Samuel L. Jackson, John Goodman, and there was, like, another guy. I can't remember either. But there was another guy who was also a big heavy hitter. And you have all these fantastic actors with what looks to be, like, Apocalypse Now with a giant monster.
Yep.
I'm in. Like, some of the scenery and shots were just beautiful in this trailer.
It's very bright and very colorful, which is great. And did you notice how fucking massive King Kong is now?
Yes.
And do you know why he is that massive?
Radiation.
No. Because this is the next cog in a wheel that is leading us to King Kong versus Godzilla. That is why King Kong is so massive now. Because they had to scale him up to fight Godzilla. So we had the remake of Godzilla, or the newest one.
By Gareth Evans?
Mm-hmm.
Gareth Evans.
And now we have Kong Skull Island. Then we will have Godzilla 2 in 2017. Okay. And then in 2020, we will have King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that is why Kong is so fucking massive now.
Were you a big fan of Godzilla growing up?
Oh, yes.
I was not. I never got into it.
I was into them because it was a giant lizard tearing havoc. They're really bad movies for the most part.
I mean, I had Power Rangers for that. I just never got into the Kong movies or Godzilla movies.
I liked them a lot. I've always been a fan of monsters, though, and Godzilla is the king of monsters.
I am too, but you get to that scale, and I lose interest. I like the more intimate monsters, but
I always liked that he had special powers because he's also sort of a superhero because he has the lightning breath that he charges up with his spikes, and it's just, it's awesome. And I really like how they handled that in the remake, where, like, you thought Godzilla was down, and then you see the spikes start to shine in the darkness, and he fucking grabs that mutant and just blasts that breath down its fucking mouth. Oh, my God, that scene was so money.
It's a V scene.
Oh, my God, it's so good. And I look so forward to King Kong versus Godzilla. Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the new Godzilla. I didn't think it was amazing, and afterwards I didn't have the urge to go back. Yeah. But I was like, I enjoyed watching that.
It was a little drawn out.
I hope the sequel's even better, and if they're doing something with Kong,
I hope
it's fun and not just like Freddy versus Jason.
All Godzillas is that Godzillas are a cock tease. Because you watch Godzilla, you want to see fucking Godzilla. Mm-hmm. But every Godzilla movie has to focus on the human aspect of it and how humans are reacting to Godzilla. Nobody fucking cares about humans, man. They want to see Godzilla kicking ass. That's all people are there to see.
I mean, that'll be in the Kong versus Godzilla. Absolutely. Movie.
That's why I'm really pumped about that, because it is total fucking fan.
Oh, no. I'm saying Hollywood is going to make it people focused. There's going to be a Kong
you think so?
Versus Godzilla movie, and it's people focused, like Alien versus Predator, like Freddy versus Jason, like all of these other
I'm hoping ones. For more fan service by the time they get there. They're like, all right, you know what? This is King Kong and this is Godzilla. God damn it. They're just going to fucking fight. And there's probably, hopefully, going to be like two or three nice, really big fucking brawls between them. And something's going to happen. Godzilla wins in the Japanese version. King Kong wins in the American version of that from the old days. Yeah.
That's the way that kind of
goes. Yeah.
That's a fun idea.
Yeah, it makes sense. But I look forward to that, so that's that one. Kong Skull Island. Very, very pumped.
I think it looks amazing. Actually, and you'll notice that throughout all of these. I think all these trailers really were very, very fantastic.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
It was killer.
They're great.
So
that leads us to other movies.
I don't think we only have one left, right?
I think it's just Doctor Strange was the only other movie trailer. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Again, Marvel is really into taking risks.
Yeah.
They seem to be taking a very big one on this one. Doctor Strange is such well known, obscure but not character. So well liked, I guess. I mean, not that he's not liked, but like
he's
people
never
don't, yeah.
the first pick for no. anyone. Nobody ever says Doctor Strange is my favorite. Nobody says that.
No.
People said Ant-Man were their favorite, like long before Marvel decided to make it a movie. Nobody has ever claimed Doctor Strange. He was great in Marvel's Ultimate Alliance, though. You could turn people into boxes. So that game is all about like beating people up and getting the higher score when you're playing multiplayer. So you turn the boxes and you null out the other person's chances to get points. And it was fantastic.
That's brilliant.
I got into so many fights because of him. Doctor Strange, character nobody cared about or wanted. And it looks fantastic. They not only cast it to the nines.
Oh my God. I can't like.
But the cinematography, it's like those incredible mind bending Inception shots. Mm-hmm. But people are fighting through that. And that's going to be just visually so inventive and different from any other comic book movie, and I'm very excited for this.
The nice thing is that it is an origin story, mm-hmm. which generally are annoying because you know the origins. It's going to work well in Doctor Strange. My one worry is that, again, bloat. How are they going to fit all of this? Because it shows him like not being Doctor Strange and then discovering and training as Doctor Strange and then being Doctor Strange with these mind-bending mythical powers. And
I heard this movie deals with time travel, so okay. I think it's going to do it in a very creative kind of way.
Cool.
Which makes me not worried as much.
But goddamn Benedict Cumberbatch, I'm going to watch this.
And Chiwetel Ejiofor, like, I loved him. Ever since I saw him in Serenity as the villain, like, I was like, this guy has fucking gravitas. Like, this is a pretty... I don't want to say it's like it could have been a one note character. It wasn't written that way because Joss Whedon like did a fantastic job with him, but like he delivered more than anybody else in that movie. So he's in it, fantastic. I think Tilda Swinton is a very interesting, brilliant choice.
Yeah,
for the Ancient One and the villain Mads Mikkelsen. It's great. He was the villain in Casino Royale, Lechif, and. As Hannibal in the show Hannibal, he's been doing fantastic work, and he looks crazy cool in this movie. Like the breaking away of his eyes, like some kind of demon or like
something's
breaking. Yeah. I don't know. It's a great effect, and I think he's going to be a menacing villain, and I look forward to that.
So I guess that's all.
He will be defeated, though. We will never hear from him again, and people will say Loki's the only good one.
Loki is a really good villain. But yeah, I get what you're saying. We need some need to stick around. Yeah.
And speaking of the Netflix shows, we got the trailers for Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and The Defenders.
Yeah.
Which is the culmination of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage all getting together to fight what is presumably an army from the Hand. Have you seen any of the Marvel Netflix shows?
No. I need to.
You need to.
I hear nothing but good things. Again, it's just, man, sometimes time is a thing.
Yeah, it's and their commitments. Like, they're 13 hours per
That's a
season.
Nice one that, like, luckily, I don't think Mandy is interested at all. So once when I do start them, I can just fucking burn through them. But, yeah, it is absolutely on the docket. It will happen. It's just, it has not yet, so.
Yeah, they all range from really good to fantastic.
Again, it's episodes. All Netflix stuff, too.
It is.
So,
it's really good, but... People complain about Marvel villains. All of the best ones are in those Netflix shows. You got Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. You have David Tennant as Kilgrave, the Purple Man, and Jessica Jones. Technically, John Bernthal as the Punisher, and I think Elodie Young as Elektra are all fantastic, like nuanced villain characters. So they're there if you want them. You just have to go to Netflix. They're not in the mainstream movies.
So one more trailer I do want to talk about, and I sent this one to you today.
That's right.
And this is Kingsglaive. Am I right? Yeah.
Final Fantasy 15. Kingsglaive.
I guess this is it's a movie, CGI made by Square. That this is kind of taking place during the first chapter of Final Fantasy 15. So it's sort of a tie-in to it.
We see the king, who is the king that was...
Is Noctis's father.
Killed in the beginning of the...
I guess
one of the trailers, if I remember that correctly.
Or
I might be misremembering.
He's definitely in trouble, I think.
Yeah,
and Noctis is
maybe
trying to get
back. Maybe they don't specify. I just
assume
he's going to
get killed because he's voiced by Sean Bean.
That's true.
And Sean Bean is known for nothing else
but dying.
But dying in every movie except for Silent Hill.
He didn't die in Jupiter Ascending either.
Okay.
And
okay.
Also, we're going to have to watch Jupiter Ascending at some point because it's fucking batshit.
Fair enough. Okay, I'll do that. It's Wachowski's. So.
Yeah, you might like it.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff, but it's crazy.
But this movie looks... I have been fooled before.
Ooh, yeah.
It is Square directing a movie, but I have high hopes. It looks really good, I feel.
I am not on the Final Fantasy 15 bandwagon yet.
No, you're not.
I think it looks okay. I'm hopeful as the game. I was really stunned with that first footage they showed, but every time it comes out since, I'm like, okay, it's looking a little bit more traditional and less obtuse than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was looking for something very different. And it's not that. And 13 left a bad taste in my mouth, so I'm kind of hoping 15 writes that, but the trailer I saw didn't, or not the trailer, the demo. Didn't convince me. Long way of saying, I'm not really even looking forward to Final Fantasy 15 too much. So this trailer didn't really do much for me at all.
It had the opposite effect on me, though.
It looked like Advent Children. And I was
to
like,
a degree,
fantastic trailer.
Yeah.
Some fantastic fight scenes. That movie is just nonsense.
Advent Children is,
Advent Children is nonsense.
I think
Spirits Within as well. Like,
yes, they are.
I didn't even talk about that one.
Honestly, I think tying it into 15 will help it because it will have a narrative.
Maybe, but it is a prequel, and it could be just completely needless for a character that maybe presumably dies at the very beginning of the game as your impetus for going out and avenging him or whatever. I don't know if that's what happened. That's what happens. I think it probably is going to. I just don't think. I don't think Final Fantasy's story is just.
They're very convoluted.
They're convoluted and they're
complex. I totally agree.
And I just don't think they can work in under like 2 or 3 hours. Like, I think you get into
that. That's why I think this will work because it's not going to have a conclusion. Because, like I said, from what I've read, this takes place during Chapter 1. So it's more of what's happening while Noctis is not there.
Okay.
So it's not so much a prequel as it is a side story almost. Mm-hmm. But I do love this has some star power in it.
Yeah, I was gonna ask what made you interested in the trailer? Like, what made it made you really excited?
I am completely unabashedly super pumped for Final Fantasy 15. As much as a Star Wars guy as I am such a Final Fantasy slave. Like, I don't care. I loved 13. I am in the extreme minority. I understand, and that's fine. I loved it. I've loved every Final Fantasy that has ever come out. I'm excited the fact that this one is being helmed by the guy that made Kingdom Hearts. And so the fight style is more in tune with that, and I love Kingdom Hearts, too.
I do, too.
So I'm very excited about that.
I do, too, though. They're doing the same kind of convoluted stuff, where it's like, why do we have Kingdom Hearts 2, and then 2.5, and then 2.8?
3.4s, and
it's just, it's ridiculous. It's like, just tell the next tale, and don't, like, add more shit into the narrative you already have. So that guy was in charge of that stuff, and I think, Kingdom Hearts 2, narratively, is not great. I think fantastic gameplay and world and everything. But the narrative's not great, so him being the game director of a Final Fantasy does not instill hope narratively for me.
I think a big part of this movie, too, is the fact that like Final Fantasy 15 has been in development for a long, long time. It was originally tied into the 13 universe. It was going to be versus 13. It was Final Fantasy versus 13.
Yeah, that's
right. It has taken so long that and I think it is much better move to they've given it the number. It is Final Fantasy 15 now, but I think at its core, this movie is maybe a hope to recoup some more of that cost.
That's what I was.
Which, as long as it's good, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Get what you need out of it. I do like the fact that it's got Sean Bean, it's got Lena Headey, and it's got Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul could go one way or the other for me when it comes to everything he's on post Breaking Bad.
Yeah. You got to pay the bills, man. I'm excited to see what he does voice acting wise. I like him in BoJack. I mean, he's.
Yeah.
It's a completely different character, but he can voice act, so.
He can voice act, you know, a sloppy stoner
very well.
So I would love to see what he brings to this medieval,
Fair
serious
enough. Fair
setting.
Enough. Fair enough.
So, hey, bitch. What's up?
So that's my last one.
That was the worst Aaron Paul, by the way.
Final Fantasy 15 Kingsglaive.
Yes.
Which I will have, so.
There you go, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so one recommendation, one.
It comes with the
ambivalence. I don't
special edition Final Fantasy 15 I ordered.
Oh, so if you order it, you get that automatically for
PSN? If you order the special edition.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. You get the Blu-ray.
Well, that's not too bad. Oh, you get a Blu-ray of it.
Yeah, and the Steelbook. And all, so I've got that, okay. So.
Yeah, well, I will probably just borrow it from you.
Fair enough,
when
man.
When I don't play Final Fantasy 15 in September.
There we go. So, that's our trailer talk. That'll be the first part of this episode, and now we're gonna.
It was long, but yeah, Comic-Con. This only happens once a year, so.
And also, you can deal with it. I don't know how this discussion is gonna go.
It's gonna be fun, but we are going to have a break.
Fair enough.
Gonna hear something really fun.
Okay.
And we will see you after that when we talk about the Fisher King.
Fair enough. Here we go. All right. So that song that we just listened to was You've Got the Power, which plays a central role in this entire movie.
You could say thematically.
Yeah.
It's very on the nose.
So Jeff Bridges. All right, so wait, before we get really into it, let's preface again that neither of us have seen this movie.
No. I'll be honest, I have no interest in Terry Gilliam's work. I like Fear and Loathing, but yeah. I've not liked much anything else I've seen by him.
I like Brazil. It's weird. Mm-hmm. But that's when I saw that it was, I didn't know this was Terry Gilliam. This is just a movie that I've heard about a lot.
Oh, so you didn't pick it because of Terry Gilliam?
No, I just picked it because I've heard about it. Like, and it's one of those that, so when it started and I saw Terry Gilliam, I was like, well, fucking okay. This is going to be something.
That's what put it over the hump for you. You were like on the fence about it. Like, oh, I could do this. And then you saw Terry Gilliam and you're like, we're doing
this. I didn't know Terry Gilliam directed it until I started watching it.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I had no idea. I just knew The Fisher King was this movie that I've heard people talk about almost my whole life. And I didn't even know Jeff Bridges was in it. I just knew Robin Williams was a big part.
Okay.
So when it really,
I knew right away. So that this came after Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So I was like, oh, that makes sense. This is just
well, it didn't come after it though. And
after in the process of recording these episodes,
exactly. But this movie came out in 91. I think Fear and Loathing was 97.
I don't know the year.
I think so.
It could be.
But it's crazy. I did not like this movie. Not even at all. When it was over, I was like, man, what the fuck?
There were no redeeming parts to it for you.
No, honestly, not.
Interesting.
Not at all. Like, no. And it just kept getting worse, almost, to be honest.
I don't think I was as negative as you were about it. There were definitely parts that I thought were really bad.
Yeah.
But there were also some moments that I was like, oh, I see what they're going for. And like, it's like they almost get it, but they don't quite. Like, I think you've mentioned the two stars, Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams. I think they do have this weird kind of chemistry together, and it works sometimes. Like, sometimes it really doesn't.
I think Jeff Bridges is the complete wrong person for this role.
Good. I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
He does not do it well.
Yeah. For preface, his character Jack is essentially Frasier. Like he's a radio show host.
I consider him more. He's Howard Stern,
but an asshole. Well, yeah. I say Frasier because David Hyde Pierce is in this movie as his assistant helper. It's like, oh, that's Niles. Like, you're obviously doing a Frasier thing here.
I thought it was he was more of his agent. But yeah, I got a Howard Stern
His
vibe.
Name is Jack. Yeah. He's this high power, big shot fucking radio celebrity who's giving advice. And this movie and its symbolism and everything is just so on the nose. Like, it starts with hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. And then it's like, okay, so first music cue that's like way too on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start the You Got the Power, which is white man with money. He's got the power. Like, it's just so
Well, and it's also a big
art school 101-ish. Like
it beats you over the head with
yes,
yuppies, rich people, and the homeless. Mm-hmm. Those are the three big things in this movie.
The homeless angle was weird, and it's I didn't know that was part of it, and it was just so fucking foreign and does not belong in this movie.
There's almost every part of this movie doesn't. I don't know what the fuck is happening. A lot of time, like, what is the ultimate purpose of anything that happens in this movie outside of maybe Jack's redemption to himself? Because fact that at the beginning of the movie, he goes on this rant against yuppies to somebody who is called into the show. Mm-hmm. And this person takes that very literally and then goes and murders people with a shotgun, a bunch of yuppies and high class people.
Which we'll put a pin in that for later because I want to talk about how problematic that scene is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he does that and then he becomes a down on his luck asshole alcoholic who.
Well, obviously he loses his high profile radio job because of that.
It sounded more like, and they don't really explicitly say in the movie, but it sounds like he kind of self-imploded because he had this immense guilt. Like he heard the news and he was going to have this TV sitcom pilot where he had a catchphrase, which was something stupid that I can't remember.
It was really dumb. Yeah, I remember that too.
Now I feel bad because I didn't remember the bad.
Okay. See, you don't, it's so bad that you can't remember it, and
that's the thing, it's not bad enough, like it doesn't cross that line where it becomes memorable or good or ironic. It's just this middling ground, and it just feels like somebody trying really hard and just really farting it up, like really badly, like Terry Gilliam farted it up.
This is
what a beef. This movie is a fucking swing and a beef.
It's not good. Like I didn't, after it was done, I was like, man, I never want to watch this movie again. And I don't have desire to.
I don't need to watch this movie ever again. That said, because I'm not as I didn't come away nearly as hot as you were. I was like, it's something very different too. Like I've never seen a movie this jarring in its content and just the places it goes and how quick and sharply it goes to those places.
Yeah.
It's really weird because it's like whimsical, I guess, kind of, but like very
magical
ugly
and fantasy
and serious and dark and very fucking dark and graphic at times, which is, it's just all very jarring. Like that's my one word review of this movie is jarring. And because of that, at least like,
if we're going to do that, I would say my one word review of it would be confusing.
That's fair.
I don't think this movie knows what it wants to do a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It seems to float, like you said, against, there's three things. There's humorous, and then there's serious, and then there's dark, and then there's humorous, and serious, and it's...
Yeah, well, I mean, to just... I'm going to try to illustrate this point best I can, but it's going to sound like rambling, because that's what this movie is. It's just a madman's ramble on film. It is... So Jeff Bridges, Jack, wants to commit suicide, but then he's interrupted in his suicide attempt by teenagers who want to burn him because they think he's a bum and are doing the service or doing the city a service. And Robin, so super fucking dark and weird, and it's not played for laughs. It's not like cheesy or tongue in cheek. It's like, this is serious.
They cover him in gasoline.
Yes, like he's
going
to get burnt alive.
He has weights tied to his ankles before he jumps into the river.
Yes, yeah, like it's dark. And it's not like, it sounds like maybe in the right hands, like those could be sight gags. But like it's not played that way. And then Robin Williams jumps out of nowhere as an insane homeless man with a sword that's,
it's like a Ford Fairlane hood ornament almost.
Yeah, and that's when...
He's using it as a sword.
A psychotic man who thinks he's a medieval knight trying to get the Holy Grail. But, and here's the twist. So, well, let's just stop there. That illustrates just the weird tone. But I think we have to talk about the twist, which is Robin Williams' character became crazy and homeless because of Jeff Bridges' character, him telling that yuppie the advice, who then ends up going to the restaurant. We find out he shoots Robin Williams. Is it wife or girlfriend?
Yeah, it's his wife.
Shooting his wife square in the face in like a... This movie, fucking Jesus Christ. shoots her in the face. We see graphic detail, her head getting exploded open, her brains and blood splattering on Robin Williams' character, who is, like, acting like he's in Jumanji or, like, Mrs. Doubtfire comedy as, like, the homeless man. So, like, are you trying to be quirky and whimsical? But then, like, you do this really dark thing, and it just never gels. Like, you can do that well. Like, I think Edgar Wright does that well. The shock and then comedy. Like, he can blend and go in between. This, it feels like Terry Gilliam has never directed a horror movie. He's never directed a comedy. It feels like he's never directed, like, a romance. Like, everything just feels wrong.
I think what this movie, Terry Gilliam is much like David Lynch, almost a very surreal director. And this movie is written with more of a serious tone. Mm-hmm. But Terry Gilliam dips into surrealism a lot in this movie. And that's, I think, a part that makes it so jarring.
Yeah. You say David Lynch, and I think that's a good way to describe Terry Gilliam, because I think he aspires to be David Lynch. I think that's definitely an influence. But I feel like his scripts are never like... They're pretty basic. Like, David Lynch, I don't like his films. I don't really get them.
Some of the others, but I get you, yeah.
But I think they're, like, really complex. And I think if people want to, they are there to delve into. And there's so much symbolism and everything. It's a lot like Bloodborne or the Souls games. Like, I'm just not that audience, but, like, I admit they're good. Mm-hmm. Like, there's more there than I want to deal with. Terry Gilliam, I feel like he tries to be David Lynch, but his stories and his subjects and his characters are all pretty one note. They're generic. Like, I used this term earlier. Like, it's like film school 101. It's like a film student in college made a movie and they really like David Lynch. That's what Terry Gilliam feels like to
me. Which is weird and crazy because of the fact that Terry Gilliam ended up directing one of my favorite movies of all time. And that movie is really fucking good. Fear and Loathing is nowhere near what any of these are.
I think it's good because of the visuals and the strong acting work. But as you said, like, Jeff Bridges feels oddly miscast.
Very
Robin miscast. Williams is doing good work with what he's given, but his character doesn't belong in this kind of movie. And Amanda Plummer as love interest is absurd.
General. She was the only part of this movie I really enjoyed to a degree.
She was kind of just cold and repellent, and that we are, as an audience, want to buy into Perry and her romance. Like, I can't do that because he is just such, like, an open, bleeding heart, like, lovey guy. Like, he's just open to everything, and she's just kind of miserable. She at no point, like, would I buy anybody being interested in her.
Fair enough.
Even fucking psychotic Robin Williams, like.
And I will say that is one of the first big turns, because all of a sudden, like, that turn comes like 40 minutes into the movie, where you come upon Robin Williams sitting on the car.
Yeah.
And it's at no point had I even fathomed that this was turning into some weird love story between Robin Williams and his crush on Amanda Plummer. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's very jarring and confusing. It comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then it becomes the central theme for the middle part of the movie.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the movie is 2.5 hours, like 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is absurd for this movie. But, like, the first 40, 50 minutes are clearly one type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second are another type of movie. It's that screwball comedy romance.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, another 40 minutes, which is like, Jesus Christ, he's going into a coma now, and he has to go get the Grail, so it becomes this dumb adventure movie.
That is the most... At that point, I was just like,
I just want
this movie to end.
Yeah, I was done. As soon as I saw him grappling up the side of the building, I'm like, why is this movie not fucking over?
And he's in Robin Williams' previous homeless man outfit, and, like, and then, for no other reason, he somehow ends up saving the dude's life that tried to kill himself, that has had no involvement in this movie.
Just happenstance.
Like, it's so fucking stupid.
It's plot for the sake of convenience. It's not plot that makes kind of sense thematically or narratively.
It has no relevance on the fucking thing. Who cares? Like, that guy being there and committing suicide could have just as easily been a completely empty chair. Yeah. It has no relevance on the plot, no relevance in the story. It has no outcome. It's a fucking headline in the newspaper the next day that is glanced over for like 2 seconds. What the fuck? What is going on, man? Yeah.
I mean, all right, so you're saying this, and it's like, the story is not confusing. Like, it's a very simple story. It's just, there's no reason the story should take these turns.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not confusing. It's not like David Lynch where you're just like, what am I watching? Like, I can't figure this out quite there.
I think it's
very basic. It is.
Why is he wearing the fucking costume to go get the thing?
Because it's thematic of the King Arthur stuff. Like, for some reason, this was his influence. Like, that Red Knight, everything. Terry Gilliam just wanted to have a very Robin Hood feeling movie, or like a King Arthur kind of fantasy movie. So you have him come out with the sword, almost like Arthur. He says, "Don't you know who I am?" And that's his Excalibur in his hand, which is the Ford bumper or whatever. And it's just, there's that theme there. So, I mean, that's why he does it. It's for nothing more. And that's the thing, is like, Terry Gilliam is visually directing for the sake of visuals, not for real themes or weight.
So why, and this, again, what the fuck relevance does that shitty trophy have to do with awakening Robin Williams from a coma?
It has nothing to do.
It doesn't make sense.
Trite bullshit.
Yeah, it's complete fucking hackness.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, well, the story of the Fisher King, and that's the name of the movie. I have it written down because I would not remember it.
Yeah.
Otherwise not. But it's a little boy spends a night alone in the forest to prove his worth as the king. In the forest, there's a fire, and out of the fire appears the Holy Grail in this mystical voice that we're assuming is God or something. And he says, "You're the keeper of light for all men." He starts to feel invincible and like good, like he's doing the right thing. He becomes a king. But over time, he reaches for the grail in the fire. He burns his hand and he gets down on it. The grail disappears and he doesn't know what happened. He doesn't feel anything. So he's wounded. He grows old and cynical, and he's not able to feel love or happiness as a man. So he's on his deathbed, I think. A fool wanders into the castle, just a simple fool, sees the king alone, and he says, "What ails you?" The king says, "I'm thirsty." The fool takes the cup from the side of the bed, gives him water, and his wounds start healing miraculously. The king says, "How did you find this grail?" The fool says, "I don't know. I only knew that you were very thirsty." What a fucking stupid parable from a stupid fucking writer. And Robin Williams carries it like it's some great importance. He's like, "I just always thought that was beautiful." It's like, it's basic. Yeah. It's fucking basic is what it is. And so you could say, going back to why I got on this tangent in the first place, that he brings the grail is he's the Fisher King. Like, he's bringing that love to him.
I guess. Maybe.
I guess the compassion, and because it's very basic storytelling, it's like the kiss from the prince in Snow White. It's just plot mechanic. It's not good. It's like, again, this is why I say film school 101, because it's not well developed. The symbolism is confusing and muddled at times. Like, it could mean this, and I see where he's going, but it's basic. And the movie thinks it's so much better.
It thinks it's a lot deeper than what it is.
Yeah.
It's got its head up its ass. It's very pretentious.
And it's very basic.
Yeah.
Is I wish it was pretentious. Like, David Lynch films are pretentious. Yeah. Like, who was the one guy we were talking about earlier that's very pretentious in filmmaking? Lars von Trier.
Yeah, Lars von Trier.
Very pretentious. Mm-hmm. Like, love or hate his movies, like, I think there's depth in the movies. Whether you react to it or not, that's something. I did not find any depth in this movie.
Here's the one depth that I did find, and I did pick this up myself, and then I confirmed it later on the internet. The Red Knight.
Yes.
The costume is really fucking cool looking.
It's cool. It looks, and this is going to sound like it's a bad thing, but it looks like it came directly from like the Holy Grail, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. But it looks very handmade and earthy, but like also sinister and kind of...
It's very sinister.
It's very cool. It's a unique visually.
It has a lot of red, almost, I'm going to say, spikes or poles that stick out. On his back that almost are very wing-esque, and he has fire shooting out of the top of his helmet.
Yeah.
He's
riding a horse. He's always riding a horse.
What I immediately picked up on this, though, and again, I said I'm very kind of a little proud of myself, but it's also very heavy-handed. The Red Knight is obviously representative of the shotgunning of his wife.
Yeah, yeah, I have that written down.
So there's the spikes and stuff on his back represent the blood splatter. The fire shooting out is reminiscent of the fire spitting out of the front of the shotgun. Yeah. And so, and Robin Williams is the only one that sees this, and every time he does, he becomes a riveling ball of mess. He can't do anything, mm-hmm. and he gets very scared and runs away. And I was like, oh, that's very obviously supposed to be like mm-hmm. a shotgun spray with the way it spreads out from his back and the fire, and then again, you know, that is blood, what that was
splatter maybe
supposed
even
to represent.
But,
so yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that. That's good. But it's that very simple symbolism that anybody can do where it's like it's red, so you're connected to blood automatically. And it is easy to pick up. Like there are some more intricate details, but I feel like there are things in this movie, symbolism-wise, that it's just so basic. It's like when you watch a movie and there's a man in white and there's a man in black.
Yeah.
Which one's the good one? I don't know. Probably the man in white. Like, it's just basic film knowledge. So, like, and Terry Gilliam is just so blunt in this movie. Like, when Robin Williams' character and Amanda Plummer are, like, connecting and they're interacting and they're starting to form a connection, they walk in front of a guy on the street who's sparking in the middle of the night. So sparks are literally flying because they're getting to know each other. Like, mm-hmm. this night reminds him of the bad night where he's covered in red of his wife, the blood, the shock, and, like, it's basic. I might have more, but I don't even have to do that. Oh, I got the power is just on the nose completely. Yeah. But, like, everything in this movie is so on the nose.
So, so much, like, it's so convoluted. It's mm-hmm. so, it feels so sure of itself. But then when you watch it, there's a lot, again, so much confusion. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like the other homeless guy that does a cross-dressing bit.
Yes.
At the, like, again, it's a total
the theater guy.
Needless fucking part of this movie. Like, it serves no relevance.
All right.
It's annoying.
I mean, all right, so I want to jump on that because that guy bugged me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why he bugged me, but what it was, and I figured this out, like I kind of pieced it together in my head, is Terry Gilliam is very close to Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who did Amelie, Delicatessen, Micmac, the French director who deals with these very quirky, downtrodden people and just... He shoots them in a beautiful light. Like, he loves his subjects, and he loves, like, these weirdos and freaks of nature and everything, like, that people get into. I'm not saying Amelie is a freak of nature. She's, like, just whatever. She's a weird little girl, but not... I'm getting sidetracked. Anyway, his films are, like, whimsical and beautiful, romantic, imaginative, and I think Gilliam's are just kind of uglier and just darker. And
cheap
then,
imitations,
like, he tries to do whimsy, but it doesn't come off whimsical and magical. It comes off, like, silly mm-hmm. and just wrong. And his movies are so morally pointed in one direction. Like, it's just very... They're very easy messages. And I got a lot of that in this movie. Like, it's just... I don't know. There's just something wrong about his style in this movie. And yeah. I feel like this script given to Jean-Pierre Jeunet or something, like, I think it could be good because he's made those good movies. He's made these movies.
Even a David Lynch, man.
Yeah.
This movie would be crazy weird with David Lynch at the helm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. That guy, the cross-dressing homeless person, he had a bit part in Fear and Loathing. He comes back.
Well, who was he in Fear and Loathing?
When they're at the police conference, he's the one describing the marijuana effects.
Oh, yes. Like, I love it.
I'll tell you this. She'd have one hell of a trip. And yeah, that's that guy. But again, it's another person that just... I think I saw it in your notes. Everybody's playing this to the cheap seats. It's so fucking hammed up.
I wrote that exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I think I read it in your notes. Like, it's so pandering, I guess. Maybe it's just... It's
over the top.
Yeah, over the top. Not believable. Like
I think the only one who comes close, and I think I wrote her name down, but I can't probably find it right away. But Jeff Bridges' character, his girlfriend, which I can't find her name. I'm not real familiar with this actress, but I thought she did like a good grounded job.
But again, she was one of the better parts, but even her, I felt like it was a little cliche almost. Mm-hmm. She was a fiery Italian.
She is, but she gives a performance like when he does his asshole turn for the second time, which is really goddamn needless. It's like it's the whole Dark Knight issue where we see the Dark Knight Rises, where we see Bruce Wayne broken and he has to become Batman, only to get broken again, so we have to see him become Batman again. Like, we don't need to repeat that same plot arc. You don't have the same character arc in a movie twice. And that's what happens in this movie. He's an asshole who then falls on his luck and then starts to learn to be good. And then for no reason, he becomes an asshole again. So we can have that plot arc where he starts to become good. And it's just completely needless.
And he forgets the... And again, the homeless people play a gigantic role and also no role. Because he goes back, he meets with his agent. He wants to get back in the game. He goes and has a meeting for a new TV show. And the TV show is about homeless people. And he had just ignored the cross-dresser homeless person who was trying to talk to him and he had been friendly with. And he's like, oh, I don't need this anymore. I'm back on top. And he ignores that one only to go into this meeting to discover that, oh, hey, this new show we want you to be on is about homeless people. And he just runs out. And I don't know, man.
It's just none of the character stuff happens out of a place of character motivation. It just seems like
for it the just sake happens. Of plot. Yeah.
And
so
that's an issue. The last thing I want to talk about real quick, and then I am done.
Yeah, fair enough.
We talk about the story being kind of convoluted and bad. I think the dialogue is also really bad. It's not like, I think it's trying to be edgy and cool, but in that way, like, I don't know, the guy who did Boondock Saints does, where it's not, it doesn't quite work. It's like, the dialogue in here is like Boondock Saints 2 All Saints Day, like with how cool they're trying to be and edgy. I have lines for you because I had to write down, and like, these are in the first 5 minutes of the movie, so I'm not spoiling anything, but like this set the tone for like, I'm not going to enjoy this movie because this is horseshit writing. Dialogues, here we go. How very un-60s of you. I'll remember that the next time you get excited by drawing pubic hair on Raisin Bran. Yeah. The fuck does that
That's
even mean?
That's when he's talking to his art girlfriend.
So, yeah. Like, is that, artists are so weird they draw pubic hair on Raisin Bran and like, it's what a fucking dumb joke. I think Terry Gilliam's the guy who would draw pubic hair on Raisin Bran and then direct a movie about it for fucking 3 hours, longer than it needs to be.
Yeah.
I was sitting on the John having one of those satisfying bowel movements, you know, that borders on mystical, and then poop miming. He mimes poop.
And this
he
is goes, Robin Williams. And again, it's that whole part, like,
for like
it's
2 minutes.
It's so dumb. Like, why are we talking about taking a shit? And it's. It has no relevance. It's completely thrown away. It's forgettable.
Yeah, yeah. It's just nobody talks like this. And it's not like the kind of hyper-realism like Quentin Tarantino does. Because Quentin Tarantino, like, nobody really talks like his characters either. Or even Kevin Smith. Like, a Kevin Smith character is a Kevin Smith character is a Kevin Smith character. Like, all of his main leads are just surrogates for Kevin Smith. But it's okay because, you know, I was thinking a lot of Randall at one point because Jack, when he's down on his luck, is working in the video store and he kind of has like the dumb customer complaint rant, just like Randall and Clerks. And this is where I had to stop and think because Jack came off so repellent and mean-spirited here. And I was not into his character, but like, again, then I can laugh when like Randall is like, how much does this cost? Or, and like they're standing in front of like the $1 sign or people are asking like, is this movie good? And like, he's ranting up. It just seems lighter in Kevin Smith's movie and again I think
a big part of that is just Jeff Bridges is not right for this role. It's
no, he's not good as the asshole businessman and he's not good as the down on his luck alcoholic. Like,
not in this, like,
really this could have been Nick Cage for the time. I think this would be a good Nick Cage role
or maybe even a Nick Nolte. Like,
ooh, I've not seen a Nick Nolte that I've loved.
Yeah, I don't know if you could love anybody in this role. I don't know anybody who could save it the way that it was presented.
I think Weatherman. Because Nick Cage, because like he's done movies like Weatherman where he's kind of a... What's that? You said you silenced that.
So I mean, fuck, we'll take that as a sign.
I think you could have had somebody good, but they just miscast it.
So final thoughts. Do you recommend this movie?
I didn't like it, but I also, like, I didn't hate it. It's kind of just in the middle. if it wasn't so jarring and weird in places, like, I think it'd be forgettable. But it's not forgettable. But it's not good. It's not bad. And it's, I don't recommend it. But if you wanted to see it, like, if it, you're like, I'm a fan of Terry Gilliam and I've not seen this movie, I wouldn't stop you. But I wouldn't recommend it.
I can't recommend it. I did not enjoy this movie at all. I started off really excited, and it just got worse as it went on. And I just wanted it to be over, like you did. This movie could have ended 40 minutes before it does.
Agreed.
And they could have cut a lot of bullshit out, and they don't. And it just, I can't recommend this movie. I don't waste your time. Don't watch it. Fisher King is not good. That's what I'll say. So that's where I got nothing else. Don't watch it.
There you go.
So, I don't know. Hopefully the next one we get into will be better. I don't think we've picked out what we're going to watch next. So
we'll wing it. It doesn't matter what we pick out. It's going to be better.
I feel so. I mean,
because I know what movies we do have coming up, and we don't have anything that's worse than this.
I can't think of anything that's worse than this on the list. So,
yeah.
This also makes me a little gun-shy about the next one that neither of us have seen, but I think it's a good thing.
I think Vertigo is going to be okay.
Yeah.
I think it should be okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
That said, real quick, a lot of people love this movie. Like, it has a really
exactly,
high rating.
That's what
so
I said.
Maybe...
I've heard good things my whole life about it. That's why I was like, yeah, let's watch it. Fisher King. So
maybe somebody out there will like it, and we're in the minority, but we just didn't respond to it.
Not us.
I hope you like it if you watched it.
If you've listened to this show long enough and your views fall in line with us, I wouldn't recommend this. So
I wouldn't either.
So there we go. As always, you know, we're going to take the time. Thank you guys for listening.
Always.
As ridiculous as it sounds, we actually do put a lot of work into this stupid, silly little show. We try really hard at it.
It's mostly just you and I. Nobody else.
No.
Because if they put a lot of work into it, they'd come on camera and talk about Madea movie with Ryan.
No, but, you know, for real, any and all listeners that have listened or stuck around any new ones, thank you guys. We really do appreciate it. Mm-hmm. As always, you know, we haven't got many, but I'm telling you, give us something to watch. We fucking love taking recommendations. It really gets
us. We have them planned and going.
Yeah.
I just started Tales from the Borderland, so that was a request, and hopefully we'll talk about that pretty soon.
And that's the beautiful thing about our show. We're movies and video games, so we take all requests. We don't care. Tell us something. Mm-hmm. If you got a fucking crazy idea for us to go out and do, we actually do those too.
That is
so
true.
So, I mean, honestly, hit
the
us up.
The more it makes us uncomfortable, the better.
Yeah, it'll be better to listen to and watch on our YouTube channel, which you should do. And we've got some ideas for some new contents that we're going to be releasing on there too. So, again... as always, I'm Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And we really appreciate it. Thanks, guys. We're the Experience Grind, and grind out.